1987, 8:30 a.m., Hearing Room E. Public hearing and work session on House Bills 2205 and 2207. Work session on House Bills 2206, 2208, and 2213.
Because this thing will leak a little bit, and I take the lid off.
We will call the House Committee on Transportation to order. We have a long agenda. We have an early floor session.
I'm tired of spilling the coffee. I found that.
Is that the long and the short of it?
Yeah, our floor session starts at 10:30. We may.
I don't know. It's new to me.
We may start beginning at 8 o'clock. Isn't everybody going to love that?
What's the matter with that?
Well, we're just getting to the point where the agendas are going to be getting longer. We're going to have more bills, and so we may start, but we aren't starting yet. Would you call a roll, Pamela?
Representatives Brigiotti?
Here.
Hayden?
Here.
Dolan?
Present.
Norris?
Yep.
Peterson? Young?
Here and on time.
Witte?
First time.
Here. This morning, as I said, the agenda's long, and we have an early, we have 2 hours, and I have to be gone at 9:15 for about 10 minutes.
Yay.
I think the first thing we're going to do this morning is, you have a copy. You have a copy of a measure summary before you, rough draft LC2338. I mentioned this before. This is for consideration as a committee bill. It's the one, as you can see, that prohibits release of information with certain exceptions about denial of driving privileges of minor convicted of drug or alcohol offense if minor was not operating motor vehicle at time of offense. Prohibits use of such information by insurer. It does not preclude the state from acting in the same manner that they act now if the minor was operating a motor vehicle at the time of the offense. All it does is clear his record so that when he does receive his license at age 18, that he will be able to buy insurance at a decent rate. That's what we're trying to do here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Young.
Yes, I would move that we submit as a committee bill LC draft 2338.
Thank you. It's been moved by Representative Young that we submit as a committee bill LC 2338. Do we have any objections to that? Hearing none, so done.
Will we be able to put an amendment in this when we get it?
We're going to be
like 94-year-old man.
We have a in the work session on House Bill 2208. There is a problem there that relates to what we just did. So don't worry about it now. But when we get to HB 2208 in work session, we will deal with the little conflict that we've got between the committee bill that we just introduced and that problem. We also have, from the Association of Oregon Counties, a number of requests for House bills to be introduced as committee bills from that organization at the request of Bill Penhollow. They have to do, as you can see, with the subjects of road and street financing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Young.
Yes, I would move that we have these drafted as committee bills, the five that are here, and have a summary and the concept.
I guess we can do that in one fell swoop, right? It's been moved that we accept the requests on behalf of Association of Oregon County as counties as committee bills. Are there any,
Mr. Chairman,
problems with these?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hayden.
I just want to be on record prior to adoption of these that I may not be able to support all of these bills, but I have no objection to them being introduced as committee bills.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I guess I will echo that. I see definitely one red flag that I will have some serious concerns about, if not more, but I will not object to the
Thank
process
you.
Of introduction.
Well, it's nice that the committee is going to see that Mr. Penhollow has to earn his paycheck.
And now you know who you have to get hold of.
If there are no other comments and no objection, we will accept these as committee bills. Thank you. Anything else before we move into work session? We are now in work session, public hearing and work session on House Bill 2205. Steve.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Motor Vehicles Division is here to offer testimony on this particular bill. This was introduced at the request of the Interim Committee on Transportation, and one of those items that we brought to our attention through looking at the code.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, I'm Tony DiLorenzo from the Motor Vehicles Division.
Mr. Chair, wasn't there an actor that had his last name?
Seems to me there was.
That was him.
It's that kind of a name. Either that or a member of the mafia. I'm not sure.
It just rings a bell. I think it was before my time, but...
Before mine, too.
Okay, Tony, go ahead.
As Steve has indicated, this is a bill that came out of the Joint Interim Transportation Committee. It makes no substantive change whatsoever. It simply moves a single section of law from the insurance code back into the motor vehicle code where it was originally. It is a section of law that tells insurance companies and agents that they must tell us when they know about an uninsured accident as part of the mandatory insurance law. It was originally in the Motor Vehicle Code because it has to do with the mandatory insurance law. And it uses the term division, and that can be very misleading because when you use the term division in the insurance code, you probably think of the insurance division. In fact, division in this section of law means motor vehicles division. So we request your support of this simple code cleanup.
It does seem like a very simple code cleanup.
Mr. Chairman, members, I did speak with Michael McGann out of the Insurance Commissioner's office yesterday by phone just to bring to their attention, and they saw no reason why this bill should not be implemented, or they had no problem.
Any discussion?
Ready for a motion?
Ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2205 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Motion has been made by Representative Young that we move House Bill 2205 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Pamela, will you call the roll?
Representative Spigiotti?
Aye.
Hayden?
Aye.
Dolan?
Aye.
Norris?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Chair Whitty?
Aye. 2205 is passed to the floor. Since this is a difficult bill, I think I'll have one of the older members carry the bill, not you.
Older members.
Older
members. I'm as old as
anybody older. Anybody older than me is older.
He raised his hand, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll have Representative Hayden carry the bill to the floor, and you'll probably get another one or something along the way, too, here this morning.
No, I thought if you take one, that's it.
That's all you're going to take this time.
I didn't mean by age older. That's for the members of the committee, or the ones that have been here longer, since it's such a tough one.
Well, it is a tough one.
I know it.
I think we'll challenge it on the floor now that you
already
have it.
Good. We'll now go into public hearing and work session on House Bill 2207, which is another vehicle code bill, and Joanne Peterson from Motor Vehicles will talk to us about that bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Joanne Peterson with the Motor Vehicles Division. House Bill 2207 is one of several bills that deal with problems in the new vehicle code. This bill makes several miscellaneous changes. The first change is in Section 1 of the bill, and it merely rewrites a sentence for clarity. The current definition of an implement of husbandry contains a reference to truck trailers having a registration weight of more than 8,000 pounds. The current wording has caused some people to misread the statute by applying the reference to the weight to all vehicles listed. There's a series of vehicles listed, and the 8,000-pound reference only applies to truck trailers. The amendments clarify that the reference to this registration clearly only applies to truck trailers. Motor vehicles, regardless of weight, are not implements of husbandry unless limited by design to agriculture purposes.
Thanks.
The Section 2 of the bill changes an outdated reference to tow cars to tow vehicles or wreckers. The old code used the word tow cars, and this was changed when the code was rewritten, but this particular section was missed. Section 3 on page 2, lines 9 through 14 of the bill, make changes relating to laws which deal with the sale, marking, and installation of seat belts. The law currently requires that sales, marking, and installation of seat belts, harnesses, child safety systems, and their anchors or other devices for attaching or securing these devices comply with rules adopted by the division. The division has adopted federal standards in this area. The law currently exempts commercial buses, school buses, and school activity vehicles from these requirements. Federal regulations currently do not require such vehicles to be manufactured with seat belts except in the driver's compartment. In the interest of safety, we believe that seat belts installed in such vehicles should meet safety standards. The changes would eliminate the exemptions. They would not require seat belts to be installed in such vehicles, but if they were installed, it would require that installation to meet these standards.
Can I interrupt? The standards adopted by the Department of Education or the State Board of Higher Education, they can't act unless we act to require. In other words, they can't, by rule, require those installation of those seatbelts in school buses under their current authority, can they?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so, but I would believe that the Department of Education would better answer that question.
I don't think they can either, but I just thought I was trying to...
They may be able to set requirements if you accept transportation that they meet some federal criteria. And they can't mandate it, but I think they can withhold funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and as indicated in the testimony here, if it is a school bus, it would become subject to the Department of Education or State Board of Higher Education standards. If it's not a school bus or school activity vehicle, it would become subject to the division's rules on it.
I see.
Section 4, page 2, line 26, deletes requirements for vehicle model to be included in odometer certifications. One of the issues that was dealt with during the code review process was inconsistency between information required to be on our records as opposed to information required to be on applications or documents that we produce. And vehicle model was deleted in reference to the code. However, last session, the odometer bill had a reference to model in it, which was not caught. And when that bill passed, it would require that we pick up the vehicle model.
Can you put the model on now? Do you have room?
No, we do not. We have never carried the vehicle model.
Well, then it's going to read, without the comma, including the make, model year, body type.
Correct.
All right. And we have room for all of that.
Yes. That's basically what that's changing there. Changes in Section 5, 6, and 7 add provisions relating to vehicle replicas. A code-related bill last session dealt with some problems related to assembled and reconstructed vehicles, and in so doing created another term, replica. These changes merely add the reference to replica in areas of the code where it was missed.
Members of the committee will remember that bill last time we dealt with that and added that.
that replica thing. I think, in fact, we had quite a hearing on that situation. Interesting right. people were here that day.
Right. Do you remember?
That concludes my testimony unless the committee has some questions.
Do we have any questions of Joanne?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chairman, looking back on page 1, line 1617, mm-hmm. person commits an offense. If the sells or offers for sale, blah, 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 or child safety systems that comply with, it was my feeling that the child safety systems are something you go down to the store and buy separately from the vehicle. I don't think any new vehicles are equipped with a child safety system per se, are they?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norris, Wayne Ivey from our division works more directly with that, and I think he may be better able to answer that question.
Fine, Mr. Ivey.
For the record, my name is Wayne Ivey, Motor Vehicles Division. Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, most vehicles, or probably all vehicles that are manufactured, are not designed with child safety systems in it. The systems that are designed are required to meet federal standards that can be installed take into consideration the seatbelt system that is in the vehicle. In most cases, there have been problems in the past, and that's why the federal standard has been revised in the past to update it so that when you put a child restraint system in the back seat or in a front seat, that the seatbelt system that is there will adapt to that seating system. In another item that is in there is also a harness system that can be attached to the regular seatbelt system. And that is also covered by the federal standards, which we have adopted.
But my point and concern is this section indicates that a person commits a particular offense if they sell or offer for sale a new motor vehicle that is not equipped with safety belts, okay, safety harnesses, okay, or child safety systems that comply with, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's suggesting if my wife and I went down to buy a new Thunderbird, no intent of ever carrying any one under 15 years of age, a seller would violate a law if that did not have a child safety system, or am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Chairman.
Steve.
Representative Norris, I think what the law is doing is not saying that you must sell them, but if you do, offer for sale.
Well, it says sells or offers for sale a new motor vehicle that is not equipped with 1, 2, 3. 3 being child safety systems.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I think the secret may be in the or, that it doesn't say it must have all three of those. The way I read it is or, mm-hmm. so that if the manufacturer insists on, then maybe it's there, but only if the manufacturer puts it there. At least that's the way I interpret it.
Seems to me it's subject to a little confusion.
Well, I see what you mean by the or, Representative Peterson. Safety harnesses. What's a safety harness? Is that what we wear?
Mr. Chair, no. A safety harness is a child safety harness. It's designed and built strictly for young children.
Well, do you mean
that it would attach to the existing seatbelt system? I believe if you go on and read further on in this, because I think our interpretation had also been in the past dealt with or, but go on and read where it says, and are installed in compliance with the rules adopted by the division. Our rules that we adopted are the federal standards, and the federal standards do not require a seat or a child safety system to be in that vehicle.
Well, that was
it's a separate standard that covers child safety systems.
So,
so the rules are just made to fit the federal standards, to put ORS in compliance with federal standards?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Do we have to change those if the federal standards are changed, and we have to make changes here too?
Mr. Chair, no, we do not.
So there's enough flexibility there that so that if the federal standards change, then we can just automatically adopt those standards?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norris.
I guess lines 20 through 22 kind of clears that up. It sort of takes away any suggestion they have got to equip them with that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I didn't go down that far.
Well, I didn't either until Steve kind of hit me over the head with it.
Well, he read faster. He's, you know, he's able to do that. So I guess that takes care of that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jolin.
Interestingly enough, I don't know why, but I always flag these kinds of things that have to do with particularly a child's safety device. Mm-hmm. And I referred to page 243, 815.055. And basically, I think this is pretty harmless anyway. There are rules already adopted in our code, and they seem very reasonable.
I think Representative Jolin, do we have something, yeah, coming up on that. It's a Senate bill, right. If it ever gets to us, we're going to be dealing with this whole subject at a later date.
That could be very exciting and possibly interesting.
Yes, I have some people down my way that would like to testify on that whole situation.
I didn't think we'd be here.
Maybe not. Representative Young.
Yes. School buses. Now, we're dropping commercial buses, right?
Possibility.
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, that is correct. We're dropping the exemption that gives them from not having any seat belt that would be installed in a commercial bus or any vehicle that was built as a bus, and then later maybe somebody else owned, or it's not used as a commercial bus, but where someone goes and installs a seatbelt in that bus, then that belt that is installed would have to meet our standards. Right now, that they're completely exempt from any standard. If someone wanted to install seatbelts in it, they would not have to install seatbelts that met any type of a standard.
Another question. Do you have a standard for retrofitting? One of my concerns is what is a Berry bus? And what if somebody decided that they should have seat belts, and then what happens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, currently there is nothing in the law that speaks to retrofitting these type of buses. Even under this revision here, deleting the exemption of those type of buses does not require anybody to put seatbelts in their vehicle that into that type of a situation where they retrofit it. If they put them in with these changes, then they would have to put in seatbelts that do meet standards.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, in that Senate bill that Mr. Chairman was referring to, I had been looking at standards for retrofitting of buses with seatbelts. And there are standards on a federal level, but they're real minimal. They have to do with seat size and what kind of assemblages have to be on the seats. And they are contained in that bill. I can get that in for the retrofit standards for you, but our law doesn't. Department of Ed nor Motor Vehicles had adopted any of those standards as of the interim one I'm looking at.
Okay. Just one clarification. What is a commercial bus? Maybe I can look it up myself.
Four wheels. people in it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, commercial bus is defined in 801-200, and it basically means every motor vehicle designed or used for carrying passengers and their personal baggage and express for compensation, with the exception of taxi cabs, passenger vehicles with a passenger seating capacity that does not exceed 5, or carrying passengers for hire with destinations and routes traveled may be controlled by a passenger, and the fare is calculated, which gets into the taxi cab area also. There's certain exemptions, but it's basically buses that are used for compensation or hire.
Anything more?
No, I'm just a little bothered why we refer to school buses and leaving other buses, and particularly vehicles that people use to transport employees, and how that may fit in with the mandatory seat belts and other things that we're doing.
Steve? You probably, Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, you probably got the wrong agency for that. When it comes to jurisdiction and transport of persons for hire or goods, PUC is a regulatory agency there. And any regulatory authority that exists in the state, because basically that industry has been deregulated, comes through the PUC. Perhaps when we have the motor carrier unit in to do their overview, we can talk about the regulation of buses.
Mr. Chair, I'm concerned about, like, farmers that transport berry pickers, right? A lot of whom are under 16, many of whom, what do they call those rigs that go out in the woods, crummies or whatever, and have those kind of vehicles where the employer apparently is liable because they're doing the transport. And I want to make real sure that we don't do some things to exempt school buses and those kind of vehicles in any way, and then find that somebody has to go back and retrofit berry buses to move kids 10 days a year, and we don't have to have the same requirements to move the same kids 184 days a year when they're going to and from school.
Well, I think that's valid. Down my way, we have buses for cone pickers, and they're under that 16 too.
Okay, I'm glad that Representative Young is bringing that up, because, you know, then I don't have to.
Let's proceed on this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, there is an exemption currently in the current law that deals with child or persons under the age of 16, and the exemption is that if the vehicle was not manufactured with seat belts, then the person is exempt from wearing them. Federal standards require motor vehicle or manufacturers of motor vehicles to put seat belts in certain vehicles, and they're basically passenger cars and your Suburbans, those type of things. Vehicles that are built under the truck, they're truck standards, basically, which includes buses. The only requirement for a seat belt is in the driver compartment itself. There is no requirement at all in the rest of the bus at all, or whatever type of vehicle that may be.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification, this bill does not deal with whether seat belts have to be in or don't have to be in vehicles. It merely states that if they are installed, they have to meet standards. That installation has to meet standards. And what it's doing is eliminating exemptions from those standards. Right now, if certain buses have them installed, they're not required to meet any standards. And now we're saying if they are installed in any of these buses, they have to meet some kind of standards, either ours or the Department of Education or State Board of Higher Education.
So that the bus, the seat belts, then, you know, they just can't be any old thing. They've got to be able to contain those that are strapped in sufficiently and so forth. Representative Peterson.
I guess I'm curious, is there a lot of misuse of this, people putting in seat belts that are below any kind of standards? I mean, I thought seat belts themselves were sort of standard, so I guess I need an explanation of, you know, how this is being misused.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, if there is a problem or how big of a problem it is, I would not be able to tell you unless we actually went around to every outlet that sold seat belts and checked to make sure that every one of them that they're selling does meet the standard. We have found different items of equipment items that do not meet standards, and we have informed the manufacturer of those or the people that are selling those that they don't. We have had several different people that have called the division asking about whether or not they had to have seat belts put in a van when they're because of the new child restraint law, whether or not they had to put seat belts in the van so that the children were seat belted up. And we'd explain to them that if it was manufactured prior to 72 or whatever the federal standard date is on that particular vehicle, no, they did not have to put them in. If they